Hey, hey, sex fans! Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, October 10th, 2012, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Are you JT Lancer?
No, I'm not. I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
Well, can I have your autograph, whoever you are?
Okay, but maybe just this once. The remarkable Dr. Shannon Chavez is back with us again this week for part two of our conversation for this, the Sex Wisdom Show. As you recall from last week, Shannon is a clinical psychologist and sexologist with a certification in the diagnosis and treatment of sexual disorders. And she is one of the co-founders of the revolutionary She Sexual Health Experts Clinic in Arizona.
Oh, we're telling the truth.
Well, yeah, because it's, you know, as they say, the best policy. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our chat, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 348, and voila! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do search. Shannon invites you to visit her and her colleagues on their beautiful site, shemd.com. And of course, she's on Facebook and Twitter, too. Look for these links in today's podcast posting on drdicksexadvice.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, fetish wear, and gear right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Dr. Dick's Stockroom banner in the sidebar.
I know this is hard for you, but it's all beautiful.
It is pretty, huh? No expense was spared. You know, you'll surely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun. And, I might add, easy. Yesiree sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salespersons scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. That's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. But be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit my stockroom today. And remember, a portion of every sale comes back to us as support for these shows. How great is that? Okay, on with the show. Dr. Shannon Chavez, welcome back to drdicksexadvice.com for part two of our conversation for this Sex Wisdom Show. I want to begin by just picking up where we left off last week. We talked so much about your clinic and this women-specific outreach that you have, and I think it's absolutely brilliant. The question I had, I wonder if there are any clinics such as yours which serve primarily or exclusively men. Do you have any information about that yourself?
You know, I don't, and I've actually been looking for one, especially in the Arizona area, because yeah, a lot of the times there are sexual concerns that the male partner is dealing with as well.
Oh,
so wanting to make him also be proactive in his treatment around his concerns. Yeah. And so there seems to be limited ones as far as offering the same model that we have and something exclusively to men around sexual health. I actually know one clinician now, and he is a referral source for us, but it would be great to know if there were more around the area. Okay. If anyone knows of any
areas. Yes, please, let us know. Both of us. We'd love to hear. The reason I asked that question is recently I did a speaking engagement to a support group for men living with prostate cancer or after a therapeutic intervention. And I was just astonished by the lack of information that these men had about their own sexual sex response and their bodies and how disconnected they were. One guy said to me after I had been talking about erections sometimes come back after surgery, and you kind of have to work at it, and I talked about a bunch of interventions that way, and so this guy raises his hand and he says, well, I'm hoping that my erection is going to come back, but how about my ejaculation? I haven't had an ejaculation since the surgery. And I kind of looked at him and I said, well, no, that's never going to come back. And he said, what? And I said, well, they took all those parts out. Your prostate, mm-hmm. your seminal vesicles, and vas deferens, and the whole nine. He says, yeah, but I still have my balls. And I says, what you don't know about your ejaculate is a lot. And, it's astonishing to me. I mean, I'm hoping, that his physician told him about the side effects, but he was absolutely crestfallen because he
said it right. Absolutely astonishing. And it's just, we actually address this topic quite a bit, the need for adult sex education.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So
and
needed.
Just knowing what your body does and how it does it,
Absolutely. Knowing your body, knowing your response, and being okay to ask your provider about it. And also providers really taking responsibility for being the educator and helping to make clients aware of all of the changes and the effects and aftermath of things like surgery, cancer, all of these issues
absolutely.
That people are facing.
Right. So everything that I've read about the SHE model suggests to me that you and your colleagues are sex positive. Is this a concept that you guys embrace?
Absolutely. We're all very sex positive, and we all promote this model of sexual health wellness, which is really what she started from, is helping to create a sexual health physical and a sexual health awareness for women around taking that initiative. So our sex positive model is just really looking at helping women to feel secure and safe around sexuality, to be able to find the information, education, and resources that they need, as well as taking the steps to address any sexual health concern, whatever it may be.
All right. And being sex positive for folks like us is way more than just a job. It's a way of life.
Absolutely.
I have another story. A couple of years ago, I was invited to do a presentation to a bunch of doctors that were here for a convention. And the first thing that out of my mouth was a statement about sex positive, and I looked around the room, and I could tell that that term did not register with anybody, any of the physicians, and so I just asked them, could anybody raise their hand, how many people know what sex positive means? And the two people that raised their hands thought it had something to do with HIV positive. Isn't that amazing? Yikes!
Right, it just really shows you, there really is a political side to sexuality, and sex positive came out of a really important movement to helping people embrace and, and learn more about sexuality and to have providers really take a role in helping to educate and lead that movement.
Which gets me to the very next question that I wanted to ask, and that is that there's surely a political aspect to SHE. I mean, you and your colleagues are coloring outside of the lines, as it were. Do you see yourself as an activist and advocate for women's sexual health and well-being? And if so, what are the political ramifications of that?
Well, I think sexuality in general being such a politically hot topic right now, definitely feel that I'm an advocate for helping to put the right messages out there, to make women aware of the news and what's being said and done around sexuality and sexual health. So I think our role, all of us here at SHE, is to be educators, to help women to gain that awareness, and also this message of empowerment, to helping women find their voices, to helping them be active as well in their communities, in their relationships, in any organization, or to address these these messages and to be able to talk about it freely. And I think the more women talk about it, the more they do become empowered.
I think so too.
And the more it becomes a priority, which is really the important part, is that it's, you know, even though people are saying funding's being cut here and there or women aren't allowed to do this, it's important for us to prioritize it. The more women can send that message out and make it more of a core part of their lives, the more change will be made.
Right. So let's talk some about sexual performance concerns, because that's probably what both you and I see most in our practices. Since most people who have performance concerns are in a relationship, I suggest that we talk about how these concerns exhibit themselves for both women and men. And that is not to suggest that this is a heterosexual phenomenon.
Right, absolutely.
So let's start with the biggie, preorgasmia. Could you begin by giving us a working definition? And then we can talk about the impact this concern has on the sex lives of women and their partners.
Yes, preorgasmia, or sometimes it's known as anorgasmia, it's sort of one of those clinical definitions for something very simple, a woman's inability to orgasm during sex. And usually there is a level of distress that comes along with this.
Okay.
So it can either be situational, which means that maybe there was a medical condition or a surgery or even childbirth that caused a change in a woman's ability to orgasm. Or it could have been existent ever since she became sexually exploratory or active. So that is part of the assessment, is learning more about her story and finding out when this came about. Has it always been an issue, or has it come about recently with lifestyle or factors specific to relationship or stage of life? I think this is really interesting, just this term in general, preorgasmia, as if there's something to come. Literally, so to speak. Women, I think, come in with this condition and are very unaware of this thing that might be coming, that orgasm is something that will just somehow appear one day, and then you'll say, oh, aha, there it is. But what we kind of teach women is that orgasm is really the key to pleasure, learning to find pleasure in your body and learning more about your sexual response and the stages of sexual response and how they sort of build on one another. And orgasm for women especially comes in many forms. Some women have non-genital orgasms. Some women have orgasms during their sleep. A friend of mine told me that during pregnancy she was having orgasms during breastfeeding.
Yes.
Very interesting as far as how orgasms occur. So it's a really,
it freaks women out, because you know, this you're not supposed to be, this is not supposed to be an erotic adventure, you know, breastfeeding your child, and
right, absolutely
just freak out. Oh my goodness.
It sort of freaks women out, and there's a general idea of what orgasm should be versus understanding sort of the elusivity of it. There's so many variations. It's really about understanding pleasure and understanding all those biochemical components of pleasure and how they all sort of interrelate and can create this orgasmic response in different parts of the body in different forms. So it's very, very interesting. Yeah.
And just the permission to have one. Like, you
absolutely
know, knock yourself out, have a ball. You know, men have that permission generally from day one. Women have to fight for theirs. It's
right.
Astonishing, but it's so true.
And I think with men, there's sort of this physiological guide to orgasm where, you know, ejaculation and erection to ejaculation, it sort of creates an easier map, so to speak, of how to get there, where with women, it's really a little less direct. So that is part of the challenge, is creating that map to how do I become orgasmic.
Right. Any rules of thumb on how an individual and or a couple might address this particular issue?
Absolutely. The first thing definitely is to do a sexual health physical, to look at, are there any medical conditions that might be causing this inability to orgasm, nerve damage, certain medical conditions, or even medications can
create
an effect on sexual response. And then also really looking at sex therapy as a model. A lot of people will say, oh, therapy, I don't want to do it. But sex therapy is very different, as you know. It's very goal-oriented, solution-focused. You don't need, sometimes it's as easy as one or two sessions to get the client to the goal. So looking at a model that works and creating really specific goals. We use Becoming Orgasmic and a lot of books to really help women sort of start that journey to start learning about their own bodies and their own history to find out when this brain-genital connection wasn't made or if there was something in the past like trauma or even anxiety and depression, substance abuse, or even sexual boredom that caused some problems in her ability to orgasm. And then also couples work. I think it's really important to bring the couple in if the woman is married or partnered to address some communication and to have her talk about it and open up some of those feelings and to allow herself to be vulnerable around having her partner learn about this and learn about her needs around her sexual response.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. statistically speaking, the most frequent sexual performance concern for men is premature ejaculation. Do you find that there's a ripple effect in the sexual concerns of women in your practice because of PE?
You know, I haven't found PE to be an issue in this practice, but prior to working at SHE, it was an issue that would come up quite a bit with men of all ages. So really learning about that concern for men and how they address it and looking at the roots of that. And I think the roots really being around intimacy,
yes.
around comfort with one's own body and being intimate with another human being.
Yeah.
And I think that really is sort of the issue that comes up quite a bit for women around sexual concerns when you have things like performance anxiety or any concern about being with someone and how you might be perceived or what that might be like, it can create a lot of barriers around sexual satisfaction. So there's definitely a lot of parallel symptoms and concerns for both PE and what some women will come in with sexual concerns.
Yeah, because I often see a connection between pre-orgasmia and PE in the couples that I work with. You know, I mean, if a guy has a really short trigger and once he shoots, so to speak, as it were, mm-hmm. then his sexual interest wanes precipitously, then, you know, the woman is left high and dry, literally and figuratively. So it's, learning how to extend one's and have control over one's sexual response is so essential for most men, and most of their sexual response, at least from my point of view, has been learned through masturbation and a quick wank in the john, just to relieve sexual tension is going to get in the way if that's the only kind of masturbation that you do when you have partnered sex.
Right, absolutely. Learning about each other's sexual needs and how each other's bodies respond. And you're right, masturbation really is a key to learning your own sexual response and needs. So it creates certain patterns or sexual scripts, and that tends to get translated in the relationship. But another thing is it there's just not a lot of communication about it.
Right.
So it creates a lot of shame, it creates a lot of shutdown with couples. So the communication factor becomes so important in this, and there really needs to be a lot of communication around talking about it and just opening it up as something for couples to discuss often.
Right. And I, in my practice, I go way beyond just the talking about things. I, actually build in mutual masturbation play as part of the therapeutic outreach that mm-hmm. I'm doing, or the therapeutic plan that I'm doing, because somebody can say, this is how I masturbate, or I masturbate four times a day, or twice a week, or once a month, or whatever it is, but it's another thing altogether to watch. And, you know, if I'm watching my partner masturbate, I'm picking up all kinds of cues about, look what he's doing with his hands, and look what he's, you know, he's tweaking his nipples, and he's pulling on his testicles, and, you know, he's sticking a finger in his ass, and, oh, I never knew that. And then the same thing is true, you know, for a guy. He's like, oh, my God, look at all this stuff that, you know, we can play with down here in a woman's anatomy that I had no idea was even there. So,
right.
It's astonishing, and you know, it's play. It's reinventing sexual play, and so many of the clients that I work with, and I suspect this is true in your practice as well, that you know the play aspect has really gone out the window. You know, and if there is any play, it's competitive play and not, you know, playful play like kids do.
Absolutely, I think, you know, play is so important. Play is really a part of pleasure and passion and bringing back all of those fun aspects of intimacy, sexual intimacy, sensual intimacy. So play is very important. I think permission giving around being playful. I think couples sort of move into different roles as the relationship matures and they forget that being playful is okay and that they can give each other permission to play, to kiss, to touch, to flirt, to bring back some of the things that really made the relationship strong in the beginning. So, you were saying mutual masturbation. I think that is always really a great thing. I do a lot of sensate focus with couples with a twist, which is not only doing the sensate steps, but also learning about each other's bodies. I think with women, it's sort of stereotyped that they have a lot of body image issues and it can create sexual shame. But I've found that a lot of men, too, are dealing with just the same amount of issues around weight gain or aging and changes that the body goes through hormonally. So it's important for couples to create intimacy around that and to appreciate one's bodies and to learn to be sensual in a different way maybe that they haven't done before and evolve as a couple, which comes so much from play.
Yes.
Learning about what each other likes and to expand on that.
Right. I totally agree. I totally agree. Since time is of the essence, I'd like to turn our attention to an area of special interest to me and probably of you too. So let me ask. I often hear from kinksters and pervs as well as your average run-of-the-mill gay and lesbian folk that they are often frustrated in their search for sex-positive and kink-positive healing and helping professionals. I suppose that you're equally attuned to this pressing concern, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think it's actually an epidemic with clinicians and professionals now in the field that there's just not, even in our education, we're limited in how much we're exposed to human sexuality, how much we're really exposed to sexual health as a treatment modality. So it's really unfortunate. And I've always been encouraged, you know, that's was sort of my push into the field too, was seeing that there's this huge niche and area that people just aren't working in and that there's so many people out there needing it. So I think it is definitely limited. I mean, I'm here in Arizona, a very conservative state, and it's very hard to make referrals for people looking for specific clinicians in that area or people with a certain background or openness to certain alternative sexual lifestyles. So it's definitely an issue.
Yeah, and if I'm having sexual issues or, you know, health issues, and I can't bring to my provider the information about my lifestyle, I'm basically shooting myself in the foot.
Right, and I've heard so many stories of bad therapy or doctor's visits where they were shamed or judged.
Yes.
Or really, language is so important in our field, as you know.
Yes.
So using language that just really shut the woman or man down and made it, you know, not okay to express these needs. So
yes.
It's definitely an issue that I hope more people will look at and really, you know, go into the field. I always encourage anyone that's interested and comfortable to embrace this as a very gratifying and exciting field.
Yes. And besides the fact, I always tell my clients, I said, if you have to spend your hard-earned money educating your practitioners, just jettison right away and move on to the next one, because, you know, that's not what this is all about.
Right, absolutely. You have to feel trusted and contained and taken care of, and it's, you know, there's a huge vulnerability in opening up and addressing these concerns, so find the right person that is a good fit for you. Absolutely.
Cool beans. Two final questions. Who inspires you, and who are your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Oh, there's so many great inspirational people out there, and I'm just a really avid reader. I love history. I love I obviously love sexuality and learning about health and body and sexual heroes. I've had really great mentors. I've been very, very fortunate. One is Dr. Patty Britton. She's a sex coach, sex educator. She basically took me under her wing, and she was a part of such a great movement of all sexual health and awareness for women and men, and has done very amazing work in her field. And also, Gina Ogden, who I'm lucky enough to have her as my ASECT sex therapy supervisor, who is just amazing. Her work is always inspiring to me.
We were at the Institute together, Gina and I,
San Francisco. Oh, okay. Yeah, so she's definitely one of my sexual heroes. And right now, I've been reading Naomi Wolf's new Vagina, a new biography, and I want to say that she's just a woman who's never been afraid to tell her story, to talk about sex openly. She's been labeled a feminist, but I just see her as an empowered woman, a woman who's not afraid to write and tell her story, and she's very raw and open. And so for her, I'm just really glad that she's written this book, and she's talking about something very similar to what we do in our model, which is this brain genital connection and the mind body, and how it's really a bigger picture than what we happen to be seeing in the field. So I'd love to read her books, and she just happened to write this one new book that I'm sure you've heard about.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
People are buzzing about it everywhere, both positive and negative. So,
absolutely.
It's a great book, by the way. I definitely recommend it.
Good. Well, with that, our time is up, and I must conclude. But I want to ask you again to give us your website address and walk us around. You have a blog there too, as I understand, right?
Right. Our blog right now is basically talking more about our workshop series that launching next month, the first one being Body Image and Female Sexuality. So anyone that's interested in finding out more info, they can go to shemd.com. We're also on Facebook, and
Absolutely.
We're also on Twitter. We Are She is our Twitter address.
And you have your own Twitter account, which we will have as part
yes.
of the links section in today's podcast posting, mind you.
Yes, I have SMC Therapy is also my Twitter, where I tend to get a little more political than the She site. So quite a bit about all the fun stuff that may be a little that's taken out of context sometimes, but that's very interesting and exciting.
Right.
So.
Right.
So shemd.com, our workshop series coming up. We have a lot of really great topics, so I encourage anyone in the Arizona area, women age 18 and up, if they're interested, get more information or call our office, and we'll definitely guide you through and help you out there with registration.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for all of your precious time this week and last. I know that we are all richer for the experience. And until we talk again, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Richard. It's been great.
Thanks, kiddo. Be well.
All right. Bye-bye.
What a terrific show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next Monday for a brand spanking new edition of the Erotic Mind Show. And more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
Right, I know, but I'm telling you, I think I've got something good right here.
Truer words have never been spoken. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and who doesn't? I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself. or the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you just better call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my sex toy review site, DrDickSexToyReviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. So look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site. And remember, a portion of every sale comes back to us as support for these shows. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.